On July 28th, ABC's Nightline ran an interview conducted by independent Russian journalist Andrei Babitsky with Chechen rebel leader Shamil Basayev.
He is a stone-cold killer whose very acts define him. The 2002 Moscow theater hostage-taking and massacre. 129 dead, hundreds more injured. The Beslan school hostage-taking and massacre. Nearly 400 dead, more than 700 injured.
Okay, I admit I'm a bad guy, a bandit, a terrorist. So I'm a terrorist, but what would you call them?
Koppel concluded the program by explaining his reason for defying Russia's wishes in giving national airtime to a self-described terrorist.
Freedom of speech is never an issue when a popular person expresses an acceptable point of view. It is of real value only because it guarantees us access to the unpopular, espousing the unacceptable. Then we can reject or accept it, condemn it or embrace it. No one should have the authority to make that decision for us. Not our government, and certainly not somebody else's.
Nightline's broadcast prompted the Russian government to revoke Russian accreditations for all ABC journalists, which isn't surprising. Russia is not the first nation to try to keep the media from giving terrorists FaceTime. In fact, the Russian interviewer, Babitsky, cited a clear parallel when he described Basayev as a terrorist, quote, more like the IRA than Osama bin Laden. The fact is, the IRA and its political wing Sinn Féin fought with the British government for 30 years over access to the media. Anne Cadwallader is a longtime British reporter in Belfast. She joins us now. Anne, welcome to the show.
And a welcome to you, Bob, from Belfast.
Anne, how did the British press initially deal with the rising violence in Northern Ireland?
Well, it was always a very difficult problem for the press because they wanted, on the one hand, to let people know why such violence was being carried out, but on the other hand, they didn't want to be seen in any way as sympathetic to it. Virtually every single news conference that Sinn Féin held, whether it was about the political situation, about policing, or about something as abstruse as farming or schools, there would always be a question from the media about how they could justify violence and always a question about when that violence would be brought to an end. Sinn Féin became very adept at answering questions about violence in a very reasonable sounding way. We as journalists became very adept at asking questions in a very hostile way. But nevertheless, we all had to go through it time after time.
The media don't necessarily have to evince sympathy in order to be aiding a terrorist or a militant organization. Margaret Thatcher described the television coverage of the IRA as, quote, the oxygen of publicity. And she was prompted in 88 to change the rules for covering Sinn Féin and the IRA. Tell me about that.
Some British MPs, particularly those on the far right, did regard any kind of publicity for Sinn Féin, even if it was serious questioning, as some kind of justification for violence. And eventually, after an upsurge in violence in which a number of British soldiers were killed, there was a ban brought in, which meant that Sinn Féin interviewees could not be questioned live on air or recorded on air. What we ended up doing as broadcasters was hiring actors, often some penurious actors, at the start of their careers, and providing them with an unexpected bonus because they spoke the words of the Sinn Féin spokespeople and they were lip-synced into the pictures.
Was there any way to gauge the public's reaction to the theatrics of hiring people to mouth the words of militants?
People just sort of got used to it, you know, and you got used to the idea that Martin McGuinness's of Sinn Féin, his words would be spoken by one actor and Gerry Adams' words would be spoken by another actor. Sometimes his mouth seemed to be doing one thing and the words coming out were slightly different. That did appear absurd. And I think fairly soon the British government accepted that it wasn't working the way they'd figured it would. But nevertheless, they didn't withdraw that ban until the peace process began to bear fruit.
But isn't there something to the idea that any attention paid to terroristic acts is exactly what the terroristic acts were intended to produce?
Well, of course, politicians tend to look to the short term. And I suppose, in a way, what Margaret Thatcher got with her censorship, her ban on Sinn Féin, was a quick fix. But there aren't really any quick fixes to terrorism or to paramilitary violence. there can only be a long-term political fix. And I think in the end, that lesson was learnt here. The ban had no effect, really, on what was happening on the ground, on the violence. It looked good. It was something she could say she'd done.
I guess it's easy to see why the Russians are infuriated to see the killer of children interviewed on a prominent American news program. But is it counterproductive for the government of Russia to decertify ABC News, to suppress news coverage of that movement?
Well, obviously, what happened in Beslan was horrendous and couldn't be justified by any normal standards. But I think in a situation where you have a civil war, both the society in which that war is being waged and outsiders internationally have a right and have a duty to inform themselves as to why this is going on, so that journalists and the state is not nannying people, is not thinking for people. Democracy requires that citizens inform themselves. And if journalists don't inform citizens, who else is going to?
Now, I understand that you're in Northern Ireland, but I assume you've been paying fairly close attention to the coverage of the London bombings. And I wondered if you noticed how the experience dealing with the IRA has informed the current coverage of the bombings.
Well, certainly Tony Blair shows no sign of intending to repeat the performance of Mrs. Thatcher's government in Northern Ireland by banning any one particular group. It seems that what he's going to be trying to do is change the law on incitement to hatred, maybe to take a more sophisticated and more subtle approach than the blunderbuss sledgehammer approach that we saw in Northern Ireland that just simply didn't really work in any way, shape or form.
Okay. Well, Anne, thank you very much.
Thanks and goodbye.
Anne Cadwallader is a reporter for Independent Network News. She spoke to us from Belfast, Northern Ireland.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at the New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.